But yeah.
You sure you want to get cute with me?
You have a backup weapon?
Never had the need.
Get one. Keep that in your suit unless I tell you to take it out.
Get yourself a Glock. Lose that nickel-plated sissy pistol.
The Liberty Lounge, brought to you every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific Time. Listen to classic country music in the Liberty Lounge to help you end your week on a pleasant note. We'll have sad songs.
I go out walking after midnight.
Happy songs.
I'm the happiest girl in the whole USA.
Patriotic songs. Songs of tragedy.
Two little boys and an old family dog. By the banks of a stream said one day.
Love songs.
Welcome to my world.
And good old honky-tonk music.
I'm a honky-tonk man. And I can't seem to stop.
So join me every Friday night and just let your hair down for a couple of hours here on Liberty Lounge.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
But you can find it right here on the Shooting Bench, coming up next.
Son, we live in a world that has walls, and those walls have to be guarded by men with guns. Who's gonna do it? You? I have a greater responsibility than you can possibly fathom. You have that luxury. You have the luxury of not knowing what I know. And my existence, while grotesque and incomprehensible to you, saves lives. You don't want the truth because deep down in places you don't talk about at parties, you want me on that wall.
You need the Shooting Bench.
We use words like honor, code, loyalty. We use these words as the backbone of a life spent defending something. You use them as a punchline.
And I am sick of the lies and the deceit and the intrusions on my privacy and the invasion of my home. And we do not intend to take this lying down.
I have neither the time nor the inclination to explain myself to a man who rises and sleeps under the blanket of the very freedom that I provide and then questions the manner in which I provide it. I would rather you just said thank you and went on your way.
And now, if you think you're ready, the Shooting Bench. Okay, here we are. Welcome to the Shooting Bench. It is the 18th of July and it's a Monday. Hope you guys had a great weekend. We had a pretty quiet weekend. Again, with no kids, no distractions, no nothing. So we were able to get some things done and get some plans made and do some things together. So we had a great weekend. I enjoyed it a lot. And we went to a show tonight. Now I'll tell you what, I wanted to see this show, but I was a little bit skeptical about it. It was, Central Intelligence with Dwayne Johnson. Good grief. Man, it was funny. Amy laughs hard. I thought she was going to wet herself a time or two. She just was cackling. She was everything she could do to keep from just busting out loud and disrupting the whole movie. But it was real funny. If you get a chance, go check it out. It's a good show. All right, a lot of stuff going on. We've got, just real quick, let me go over this. We've got this coming weekend a defensive carbine class here locally, and that will that'll be on the 23rd and 24th. It may be where that's a Def Tech class. I'm co-hosting it with Defense Technologies Academy, or Techniques Academy, I'm sorry. And if it doesn't fly, we've got two or three people already signed up for it, But if by chance it may get moved to the 20th of August. Let's put it that way. We've already got several people signed up for the class on the 20th and 21st of August. We're going to try maybe to consolidate those and cut down on travel and stuff a little bit. The 30th, I will be up in Orem, Utah. The following weekend, I'll be in Tucson. The following weekend, I'll be in Tucson the 5th and 6th, probably, possibly the 7th. The following weekend, 12th, 13th, and 14th, I will be in New Mexico with a personal defense handgun 3 class. The 20th and 21st of August is another defensive carbine class. 27th and 28th, I have to look at my calendar. It seemed like I had something else that weekend, too. I don't remember what it was. But anyway, we're going to be pretty busy for the next month, so got a lot of stuff going on. So, got some, let me check and see what's going on in the chat room here. Desert Rat, good to see you. Charlie Brown, C7, glad you made it, my brother. The Tanker, Mini, Mountain Shooter, Peanut Rider, Radio Doc, and Anonymous there. Good to see all you guys. Let's see. Mountain Shooter, what are you talking about? Say hello to Nuttin' Fancy. Who's Nuttin'? I mean, I know who Nuttin' Fancy is, but I don't think I didn't notice him in the chat room, unless that's that Anonymous that's in there. So, anyway. All right. A lot of interesting things have gone on here lately. As you, I'm sure you noticed, the war on cops is continuing. We had the shooting in St. Louis, in which I think 3 officers were killed, and I forgot how many more, 6 or 7 more shot. The very next morning, we had a shooting in Milwaukee. Somebody apparently just walked up and shot somebody in his car. There's been other things, you know, besides shootings. There's been vandalism, a lot of vandalism. A lot of things going on with this Black Lives Matter deal. And frankly, I don't see it getting a whole lot better anytime soon. They have, and I'm not so sure that there's not entities out there that are possibly financing this movement and also maybe facilitating the success of some of these attacks. So, stay alert, pay attention to what you're doing. It may be an interesting next few weeks here. Interesting year. We're going to see a lot of interesting stuff going on here in the next few months, as we've mentioned before. So let me get right to it. There's a few things we need to get. It's going to have kind of a news blitz again, and this may wind up being a standard for Mondays, because after the 1st of August, or beginning on the 1st of August, I think. Isn't that a Monday? Let me check my handy-dandy calendar here. Yeah, the 1st of August is a Monday. So beginning that week, there's going to be, the shooting bench is going to be 2 hours pre-recorded. It will be new, fresh, informative, fun, all that stuff. I just won't probably interact with you quite so much on the chat room. I'll be here, but it will be pre-recorded. Tuesday I won't be there. It's going to be Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I got to get my own schedule in my head. So you guys pay attention now. Monday, 2 hours. Wednesday, 2 hours. Amy will also be on Monday for an hour at a regular time. I'll be on at my regular time. It's just going to go 2 hours instead of one. Tuesday, neither one of us will be there. Monday's the only day that Amy's doing until she gets her other obligations taken care of, and that'll probably be around September, first part of September or something like that. Wednesday, I'll be on for 2 hours. Friday, I'll be on for 3 hours. I'll be starting at Amy's regular time with news and mopping up for the end of the week, and then Liberty Lounge at its regular time. So Liberty Lounge is subject to start at any time during that or after that show. So that's what we got going on here. And we were thinking about doing 3 hours on Monday also, or Wednesday, one or the other. But I think that's going to be 7 hours a week. And I'm doing five right now. No, I'm doing six right now. So you're getting more time, just not live as often. Does that make sense to you? So that's what's going on. Okay. Just not too long ago, let me get you a date on this. Something came up here that has several things here recently kind of turning the Second Amendment world on its ear in a few things. Others a little better. So this was, well, I lost it. All right, well, never mind. We'll see if I can get that back later. Hang on, I've got something going on with the... Something going on with the computer here. Let me see if I can get this taken care of here. Alright. There it goes. Okay. Got it. Okay. Here in Arizona, we lost my other story, but here in Arizona, the governor has signed something. This was a month or so ago. Has signed a couple of bills that has enhanced our concealed carry privileges here. I say privileges because concealed carry is a right. We are privileged in some ways to do certain other things. Now, whether you want to continue to try to outsmart the system and do whatever you want and take the chance on getting caught, that's okay. I have no problem with that. But let me tell you what these two bills are that were signed just a month or so ago. This was, has kind of helped to enhance our concealed carry. One of them is H-2338, which allows individuals to carry firearms in their vehicles or person on any public right-of-way. Okay, now, we can already carry in, on highways and stuff like that. That's not what it means. But this is to help further protect from things other than, let's see, let me make a, trying to figure out what's a good example of this. I think any public right-of-way is parks. I'm trying to think of some examples. I've been rushing so hard tonight I can't think, save my life. He also signed SB 1266, which allows lawsuits to be filed against cities and municipalities that institute their own gun control. You know, we have a preemption law here that prohibits them from doing that. But the problem is, just like the lock boxes that are supposed to be in all public buildings, it's a law that they have to have one, but there are no penalties for not having one. So if they have it, fine. If they don't, there's nothing you can do. But with this one now, if a city or county or some other lower political subdivision of some kind decides to institute or implement their own laws in their little area, then now we have the everything set in place for them to be sued, for us to sue them. So that's interesting. We'll see how all this works out and how many suits are filed here. So, another interesting story. This is in Hancock County, Mississippi. A cop was out by himself. Well, he wasn't totally by himself. He was with his dog, a pretty smart canine. They're all well-trained and pretty smart, or they would not be in that position. So he jumped out of his car and chased down some multiple guys, three of them I think it was. And they had gotten him down and threatened to slit his throat. Couldn't get to his gun, couldn't get to his taser. He did manage to weasel around there a little bit and hit the automatic door opener for his car. And that's the signal for the dog to jump out of there. The dog jumped out of the car and charged the three guys, bit at least one of them, maybe two, and did successfully stop them. The three of them were dragging the cop to the woods where he was able to get his hands free and open the door. So I thought that was kind of neat. Good looking dog too. It looks like a black shepherd of some kind. It's actually a Belgian. I'm not sure how to say this. It looks like Malinois. I don't know if it's Malinois or something like that. But sharp looking dog, and he looks like he won't take any crap off of nobody either, for sure. So let's see here. This story, I love stories with happy endings. This one is so just a great story. A couple of mental midgets here decided to waltz into a McDonald's in, where was this? No, it doesn't save it. Well, I'm not sure. Anyway, they went into this McDonald's, shot a round of a shotgun round into the ceiling, saying, "All right, this here is going to be a robbery." You know, so they walk up to the counter. They're expecting everybody to be nice. They got $2,300 in cash and went to waltz. Now, the problem that they didn't notice here, what they didn't pay attention to too much, was the fact that there were 11, count them, 11 members of the French Special Forces in there. This is an anti-terrorist. It's an equivalent of the British SAS, what they are. And they were none too happy that their Big Macs and French fries were disturbed by these guys. They kept their cool, didn't do anything, didn't want to chance any bloodshed from innocents there. So they just sat there and done as they was told. And as these are all guys that have seen combat before. So as the first of the robbers stumbled out the door, they took him into custody easily without any gunplay. The second one decided, however, that he was going to turn his shotgun on these guys. And that turned out to be a really serious mistake for him. He was shot multiple times. They're both going to survive. Everything's okay. I think the first one got beat up just a little bit. It was a little rough getting the cuffs on him, I reckon. Anyway, thought that was pretty interesting. Never fails. I know some of you have seen the story about what they're calling the 1 in a billion shot out of Aurora, Colorado. A cop shot a bad guy here. Actually didn't shoot the bad guy. Shot the bad guy's gun. And what happened was this bullet entered the barrel of the gun that was pointed at him. And obviously opened it up, disabled it, and that was the end of that assault. Now, what I understand there that this is just an off-the-cuff comment here, saying that it's a 1 in a billion shot. It's actually not anywhere near a 1 in a billion shot. I've done just a little bit of research there for about 2 minutes, and found another one where a bullet had entered the cylinder of a revolver and locking it up. So think about this a minute. How many shootouts are there in a day or a month or a year in the United States? Maybe even worldwide. We can use worldwide. How many shootouts are there where you're standing somewhere where a guy is pointed in at you and you are shooting or somebody is shooting back at them? Not that many. A lot of them are because they're running away, firing behind them, already shot and leaving, not got their gun out yet, dropped the gun, any number of things, but I don't think there's that many where the two guys are standing face to face with their guns pointed in at the firing position and shooting at each other. So that lowers the odds way, way down there. Being as I found two of them, well, this one and one more, that soon, I have no idea what the number would be. And again, I understand that this was probably just a, they're not meaning this as a statistic, just a tongue-in-cheek comment. But what makes this very possible is the fact that you are, okay, both of you got two men or two people that are somewhere probably between, I say 5'8 and 6 foot, somewhere in there. They're both bringing their guns up, whether it's one or two hands, if they're facing, even if it's to the side a little bit. They're bringing their gun up about arm level and their shoulder level. But the gun itself is going to be down about chest level. Why? Because they're pointing at the chest of the person that they're shooting at. The other person is doing the same. They also are focused and concentrated on the threat, which is the gun, not the guy behind it, to most people. Obviously, it's the guy. But a lot of they see the gun. And they're kind of focused on that. So between your eyes being focused on that and your hands being in the naturally the same position, this is why people get shot in the hands all the time. And it's never mentioned. Guns get disabled frequently because they're shot in the grip, you know, where the magazine is. Somebody shot in the fingers, the hands, arms, wrists, stuff like that. Not uncommon at all. But that's how that happens. It was an interesting story, and I applaud the guy. It was a great show. But probably not quite as remarkable as they make it out to be. You know, this Pokemon Go. I don't even know what it is. I just heard about it two or three days, maybe a week ago, and I thought it was a joke. All these stories that I'm seeing. These retards are falling off cliffs and walking out in front of cars and getting shot and getting charged with trespassing and stuff because they're playing this stupid-ass game. Unbelievable. I had no idea. Amy and I went to Walmart this afternoon to get something. I don't know what, some milk and stuff. Whatever it was. As soon as we walked through the door, we were 15 feet into the building. Amy veers off to the left to grab a cart, and here's a guy, a kid, standing in the middle, and he's chasing this imaginary thing that he can see on. He said he was playing that stupid game. I cannot imagine how many people are going to get kidnapped, beat up, robbed, run over, shot, charged with whatever because of this ignorant game. I was awestruck. I was astounded at the fact that I have actually witnessed one of these people playing that game today. Unimpressive to me. In Cleveland, the police union leader there wants emergency suspension of basically constitutional rights, but he wants emergency suspension of the right to open carry because of what went on in Dallas the other day. Not realizing still that, yeah, I know there are some idiots out there, some really idiots that should not be carrying rifles openly in a place like that, in a time like that. You know, there's times to make a stand and make a political statement with doing that. There's other times when I really think that you should put your political ideals and stuff behind you and do the smart thing and conceal. I'm not saying it should be a law. I'm just saying you should be smart enough to do that without having to be told to do it. There's just times, and I've told you numerous times, there's things and things I do and places I go that that I don't carry openly, because I think it's the wiser and more intelligent thing to be concealed, especially when it might give me an advantage for doing it. But so far, it looks like the mayor has said that no, that's not going to happen. He's reviewed the whole thing and said that's not going to happen. No. Okay, I'm going to do one more quick story here, and then I got another treat for you that we haven't done for quite a while. And that'll be coming up right after the break. There was a teenager in Germany that has attacked a bus full of passengers here with an axe and a knife. It wasn't a bus, it was a train, I'm sorry. He has attacked about 20 passengers on a train in northern Bavaria. Actually, there was 3 people seriously hurt, one with light injuries, but he attacked, 20 of them. And he was 17 years old. He was shot and killed when the train stopped or what. Yeah, the train was stopped, and he managed to get away. Police task force that happened to be in the vicinity pursued him, shot him dead. He was carrying an axe and a knife when he had attacked members of the unit that were after him. Asked whether the attacker had an Islamist background, said, one witness said inside the train, the teenager just shouted Allah Akbar during the assault. The reporter's being investigated. So, I don't know, that's all we're getting on that right now. That comes from The Guardian. All right, now what we haven't done for a long time here is, you guys might remember, it's been quite a while since we've done this, but you might remember a deal called Sundown at Coffin Rock. And it is a great, great story, very thought-provoking, I think, right now. I think it's something that everyone should make your own good judgments and thoughts here, and we're going to come up with that right after the break here, and then I'll be back here right at the little after the top of the hour. We've run over just a little bit because Amy's show was late starting. But please pay attention to this. Don't leave me because I'm not live. I will be back live at the end of the show. But listen to these. It's been a long time. It's probably been 2 years since I've read these on the air, I think. So, all right. Stay with me here.
Hey, pretty baby, are you ready for me? Yeah, you good rockin' daddy down from Tennessee. Just that off about San Antonio with the radio blasting and the bird dog on. As the beat travel, my head sound the town, but no local yoga gonna shut me down. Me and my boys got the trigger wound, and we'll come a thousand miles from a guitar town.
If you're a country music fan, particularly classic country, join me, Cope Reynolds, every Friday night for Liberty Lounge right here on the Survival Circle Network.
Nothing ever happened around my hometown. I ain't kind of just hang around. But I heard someone call my name one day, and I followed that voice down a lost highway. Everybody told me you can't get far on $37 in a Jeep car.
Absolutely the fastest 2 hours on internet radio, Liberty Lounge, every Friday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Pacific, 10 to midnight Eastern, right here on Survival Circle.
Wake up in the middle of the night in a truck stop, stumble in a restaurant, wonder why I don't stop. Well, I gotta keep rocking while I still can.
No Nobody will stand with you if you don't stand. God can't stand with you if you don't stand. And don't stand and then sit down. It's worse. It sets a precedent. You know, count the cost. The cost may be dear. It may be everything. It may be your life. Okay? But unless we're willing to value freedom more than our lives, do we really deserve freedom? God can't stand with a man until the man stands. And so God is waiting for us to stand. And at that moment that when he stands, God could stand with him. And then the other thing is that people could stand with him. You know, nobody can stand with you until you stand.
That's what I like to see, bullseyes, every time. And you can do the same thing with Byard Barrels. As long as you do your part, the custom barrels that you get from Byard Barrels will deliver award-winning accuracy shot after shot. Byard Barrels specializes in standard and 1-in-9-inch twist match-grade 22 long rifle barrels for the Ruger 10-22 and AR-15. If you want to win, visit their site at ByardBarrels.com. That's B-E-Y-E-R Barrels.com. Or you can call Clint at 360-374-9476 and tell him you heard it on the Shooting Bench, would you? Let him know that his advertising money is doing him some good.
But we have to stop looking for salvation in this system. The system is not going to fix itself. If the system is restored, it will be restored with the hammer of patriotism smacking this system out between the anvil of freedom and teaching this system that there is a shape we want it to maintain and that we have the forge of rage, and we will put that system in that forge of rage, and we will use that hammer of liberty and pound it against the anvil of freedom until it returns to the shape we want it to be in.
Welcome back to another segment of the Shooting Bench, right here on the Survival Circle Radio Network. Okay, story time right now. Sit back and relax and enjoy this story. Good, good story. What I'm about to read is a work of fiction. Any similarity to actual events are yet to be seen. The story originally came out in the Blue Press about, 98, 99, somewhere in there. The editor there was kind enough to allow distribution on the Internet. It's called Sundown at Coffin Rock. This is Part 1 by Raymond K. Payton. I'll read Part 2 if we have time. The old man walked slowly through the dry, fallen leaves of autumn. His practiced eye automatically chose the bare and stony places in the trail for his feet. There was scarcely a sound as he passed, though his left knee was stiff with scar tissue. He grunted occasionally as the tight sinews pulled. Damn chainsaw, he thought. Behind him, the boy shuffled along, trying to imitate his grandfather, but unable to mimic the silent motion that the old man had learned during countless winter days upon this wooded mountain in pursuit of game. He's 15 years old, the old man thought. Plenty old enough to be learning. But that was another time, another America. His mind drifted, and he saw himself, a 15-year-old boy, following in the footsteps of his own grandfather, clutching a 12-gauge in his trembling hands as they tracked a wounded whitetail. The leg was hurting worse now, and he slowed his pace a bit. Plenty of time. It should have been my own son here with me now, the old man thought sadly, but Jason had no interest, no understanding. He cared for nothing but pounding on the keys of that damn computer terminal. He saw nothing, knew nothing about the woods or where food came from or freedom. And that's my fault, isn't it? The old man stopped and held up his hand, motioning for the boy to look. In the small clearing ahead, the deer stood motionless, watching them. It was a scraggly buck, underfed and sickly, but the boy's eyes lit up with excitement. It had been many years since they'd even seen a single whitetail here on the mountain. After the hunting had stopped, the population had exploded. The deer had eaten the mountain almost bare until erosion had become a serious problem in some places. That following winter, three starving does had wandered into the old man's yard, trying to eat the bark off of his pecan trees, and he had wished the animal rights fanatics could have been there then. It was against the law, but the old man knew a higher law, and he took an axe into the yard and killed the starving beasts. They didn't have the strength to run. The buck finally turned and loped away, and they continued down the trail to the river. When they came to the big oak, the old man turned and pushed through the heavy brush beside the trail, and the boy followed, wordlessly. The old man knew that Thomas was curious about their leaving the trail, but the boy had learned to move silently, well, almost, and that meant no talking. When they came to Coffin Rock, the old man sat down upon it and motioned the boy to join him. "You see this rock, shaped like a casket?" the old man asked. "Yes, sir." The old man smiled. The boy was respectful and polite. He loved the outdoors, too, everything a man could ask in a grandson or a son. I want you to remember this place and what I'm about to tell you. A lot of it isn't going to make sense to you, but it's important, and one day you'll understand it well enough." The old man paused. Now that he was here, he didn't really know where to start. "Before you were born," he began at last, "this country was different. I've told you about hunting, about how everybody who obeyed the law could own guns. A man could speak out anywhere without worrying about whether or not he'd make it back home or not. School was different, too. A man could send his kids to a church school or a private school or even teach them at home. But even in the public schools, they didn't spend all their time trying to brainwash you like they do at yours now." The old man paused and was silent for many minutes. The boy was still, watching a chipmunk scavenging below a fallen tree below them. "Things don't ever happen all at once, boy. They just sort of sneak up on you. Sure, we knew guns were important. We just didn't think it would ever happen here in America. But we had to do something about crime," they said. "It was a crisis. Everything was a crisis. There was a drug crisis, terrorism crisis, street crime, drug crime. Even a health care crisis was an excuse to take away a little more of our rights." The old man turned to look at his grandson. "They ever let you read a thing called the Constitution down there at your school?" The boy solemnly shook his head. "Well, the Fourth Amendment's still in there. It says there won't be any unreasonable searches or seizures. It says you're safe in your own home." The old man shrugged. "That had to go. It was a crisis. They can kick your door open any time, day or night, and come in with guns blazing if they thought you had drugs, or later, guns. Oh, at first it was just registration to keep the guns out of the hands of criminals. But that didn't work, of course, and then later they wanted to take them. They knew where to look. They banned assault rifles, and then sniper rifles, and then Saturday night specials. Everything you saw on TV or in the movies was against us. God knows the news people were. And the schools were teaching our kids that nobody needed guns anymore. We tried to take a stand, but we felt like the whole face of our country had changed when we were left outside. Me and a friend of mine, when we saw what was happening, we came and built a secret place up here on the mountain, a place where we could put our guns until we needed them. We figured someday Americans would remember what it was like to be free, what kind of price we had to pay for that freedom, so we hid our guns instead of losing them. One fellow I knew disagreed. He said we ought to use our guns now and stand up to the government. He said the colonists had fought for their freedom when the British tried to disarm them at Lexington and Concord. Well, he and a lot of others died in what your history books call the Tax Revolt of 1998. But, son, it wasn't the revolt that caused the repeal of the Second Amendment, like your history book says. The Second Amendment was already long gone before they repealed it. The rest of us thought we were doing the right thing by waiting. I hope to God we were right. You see, Thomas, it isn't government that makes a man free. In the end, government always does just the opposite. They gobble up freedom like hungry pigs. You have to have laws to keep the worst of man under control, but at the same time, the people have to have guns, too, in order to keep the government itself under control. In our country, the people were supposed to be the final authority of the law, but that was a long time ago. Once the guns were gone, there was no reason for those who run the government to give a damn about laws and constitutional rights and such. They just did what they pleased, and anyone who spoke out, well, I'm getting ahead of myself. It took a long time to collect up the millions of firearms that were in private hands. The government created a whole new agency to see to it. There were rewards for turning your friends in, too. Drug dealers and murderers were set free after 2 or 3 years in prison, but possession of a gun would get you mandatory life behind bars with no parole. I don't know how they found out about me. Probably knew I'd been a hunter all these years, or maybe somebody turned me in. They picked me up on suspicion and took me down to the federal building. Son, those guys did everything that they could think of to me. Kept me locked up in this little room for hours. No food, no water. They kept coming in and asking me where the guns were. I said, what guns? Whenever I'd doze off, they'd come crashing in, yelling and hollering. I got to where I didn't know which end was up. I'd say I wanted my lawyer, and they'd laugh. Lawyers are for criminals, they said. You'll get a lawyer when we get the guns. What's so funny is, I know they thought they were doing the right thing. They were fighting crime. When I got home, I found Ruth sitting in the middle of the living room floor, crying her eyes out. The house was a shambles. While I was down there, they come out and took our house apart. Didn't need a search warrant, they said. National emergency. Gun crisis. Your grandma tried to call our preacher, and they ripped the phone out of the wall. Told her they'd go easy on me if they just knew. Tell them where I kept my guns. And the old man laughed. She told him to go to hell. She stared into the distance. He stared into the distance for a moment as the laughter faded. They wouldn't tell her about me, where I was, or anything that whole time. She said she thought I was dead. She never got over that day, and she died the next December. They've been watching me ever since, off and on. I guess there's not much for them to do anymore now that all the guns are gone. Plenty of time to watch one foolish old man. He paused. Beside him, the boy stared at the stone beneath his feet. Anyway, I figured one day America would come to her senses. Our men will need those guns, and they'll be ready. We cleaned them and sealed them up good. They'll last for years. Maybe it won't be in your lifetime, Thomas. Maybe one day you'll be sitting here with your son or grandson. Tell him about me, boy. Tell him about the way I said America used to be. The old man stood, his bad leg shaking unsteadily beneath him. You see the way this stone points? You follow that line 100 feet down the hill. You'll find a big round rock. It looks like it's buried solid, but one man with a good pry bar can lift it. And there's a concrete tunnel right under there where it goes back into the hill. The old man stood, watching as the sun eased towards the ridge, coloring the sky and the world red. Beneath him, the river still splashed among the stones as it had for 1 million years. It's still going, the old man thought. There'll be someone left to carry on for me when I'm gone. It was harder to walk back. He felt felt old and purposeless now. And it would be easier, he knew, to give in to that aching heaviness in his left lung that had begun to trouble him more and more. Damn cigarettes, he thought. His leg hurt, and the boy silently came up beside him and supported him as they walked the last mile towards the house. How quiet he walks, the old man thought. He's learned well. It was almost dark when the boy walked in. His father looked up from the paper and said, Junior, Granddad have a nice walk? Yes, the boy answered, opening the refrigerator. You can call Agent Goodwin tomorrow. Gramps finally showed me where it is. All right, well, since I'm in the mood, I think we're going to go ahead and do part two. So stand by just a second. Let me bring that up here. Sundown at Coffin Rock, part two. Thomas sat alone on the cold stone, shivering slightly in the chilly pre-dawn air of this April morning. The flashlight was turned off, resting beside him on the bare granite of Coffin Rock, and involuntarily he strained his eyes in the gray non-light of the false dawn, trying to make out the shapes of the trees and the mountains across the river. Below, he could hear the chuckling of the water as it crossed the polished stones. How many times had he fished there, his grandfather beside him? He tried to shug away the memories, but why else had he come here except to remember? Perhaps to escape the inevitable confrontation with his mother. She would have to be told sooner or later, but Thomas infinitely preferred later. Mom, I've been expelled from the university, he said out loud in a conversational tone. Some small night animal, startled by the sudden sound, scurried away to the right. I know this means you won't get that upgrade to C3, and they'll probably turn you down for that surgery now. Gee, Mom, I'm sorry. It sounded so stupid. Why, she would ask. How? How could he explain it? The endless arguments, the whispered warnings, the subtle threats. Dennis had told him to expect this. Dennis had lost his parents back in the first purge in 2004, and his bitter hatred of the state's iron rule had failed to ruin him only because of his unique and accomplished abilities as an actor. Only with Thomas did he open up. Only with Thomas did he relate things that he learned while in the youth re-education camp near Charleston. Thomas shuddered. It was his own fault, he knew. He should have kept his mouth shut, but like Dennis told him. All of his friends had come and shook his hand and pounded him on the back. "That's telling him, Adams," they said, but their voices were hushed as they glanced over their shoulders as they congratulated him. And later the volunteers of the Green Ribbon Squad kicked his ass all over the shower room. They had stood by in nervous silence, their faces turned away, their eyes averted, their tremulous voices silent. He sighed. Could he blame them? He'd been afraid, too, when the squad walked up and surrounded him, and if he could have taken back those proud words, he would have. Anyone is afraid when they can't fight back, he discovered. So they taught him a lesson, and he'd expected it to end there, but then yesterday had come the call to Dr. Morton's office and the brief hearing that had ended his career at the university. "Thomas," Morton had intoned, "you owe everything to the state." Thomas snorted. The light was growing now, and he could see the pale, rain-washed granite in the grayness as it glowed. Coffin Rock was now a knob, a raised promontory that jutted up from the wide, unbroken arm of the mountain's stony roots, its cover of soil pushed away. There were deep gouges scraped across the surface of the rock where the backhoe had tried vainly to force the mountain to reveal its secrets. He was too old to cry now, but Thomas Adams closed his eyes tightly as he relived those moments that had changed his life forever. The shouts and angry accusations as the agents found no secret arms cache still seemed to ring in his ears. They had threatened him with arrest, and once he had thought the government agent named Goodwin would actually strike him. At last, though, they had accepted defeat and turned down the mountain, following the gashed trail of tobacco as it rumbled ahead through the woods. At home, he had found his mother and father standing ashen-faced in the doorway. "They took your grandpa," said father in disbelief. "Just after you left, they put him in a van and took him." "But they said they wouldn't," Thomas had shouted, and he ran across the yard to the old man's cottage. The door was standing open as he wandered from room to room, calling for his grandfather he would never see alive again. "It was his heart," they said. 2 days after they'd taken him, someone called and tersely announced that the old man had died in the indigent clinic a few hours after his arrest. "Sorry," the faceless voice had muttered. Thomas had wept at the funeral, but it was only in later years that he had come to understand the greatest tragedy of that day. The old man had died alone, knowing that his own grandson had betrayed him. That grandson was Thomas Adams, and he was now too old to cry. But in the growing light of the cold Mountain Dew dawn, he did anyway. Thomas was certain that his father's decertification 6 months later was due to the debacle in the forest. As much as anyone did these days, they had owned their home, but the certification board would still have evicted them except for the intervention of Cousin Lou, who worked for the state supervisor. As it was, they lost all privileges, and when his father came down with pneumonia the next autumn, medical treatment was denied. He had died 3 days later, after the first anniversary of Grandpa's death. Thomas had been sure that he would be turned down at the university, but once again his cousin had intervened and a slot had opened for him. But now that's finished, he reflected. He would be unable to obtain any certification other than manual labor. "Why didn't I keep my mouth shut?" he asked in the morning stillness. In a tree behind him, a mockingbird began to sing its ageless song, and as if in answer, the forest below began to twitter and chirp with the voices of other birds greeting the new day. No, what he had said had been truth, and nothing could change that. The state was wrong. It was evil. It was unnatural for men to be slaves of their government, always skulking, always holding their tongues lest they angered the state. But there is no state, Thomas considered. There are only evil men holding power over other men, and anyone who speaks out, dares to challenge that power, is crushed. If only there were a way to fight back. Thomas shifted on the stone, hanging his feet on the downhill side. His feet had almost touched the grass that day, but now, though his legs were certainly longer, it was at least 10 inches to the scarred rock surface below. As he kicked his heels back and forth, he could almost hear his grandfather speak from a long time ago. One day America will come to her senses. Our men will need those guns, and they'll be ready. We cleaned them and sealed them up good. They'll last for years. Maybe it won't be in your lifetime, Thomas, but one day you'll be sitting here with your son or grandson. Tell them about me, boy. Tell them about the way I said America used to be. You see the way that stone points? The old man was saying. You follow that line 100 feet. Thomas's heels were suddenly still. For many minutes he did not move, playing those words over and over in his mind. Follow that line. What hidden place in his brain had concealed those words all these years? How could the threats have failed to dislodge it? He stood upon shaky legs and climbed down the coffin rock. In his mind's eye he could see the old man pointing, and he walked down the hill and through a clinging briar patch, counting off the paces. The round stone did seem solidly buried, but he scratched around near the base, found that the rock ended just an inch or so beneath the surface. One man with a good bar can lift it, Grandfather had said. Thomas forced his fingers beneath the stone, and with all his strength in his 21-year-old body, he lifted. The stone came up, and he slid it to one side. Cool air drifted up out of the dark opening in the mountain. Thomas looked to the right, where the scars of the state's frustration ended, only 15 or 20 feet away. They had been that close. He squatted and started into the darkness, and remembered his flashlight. In a moment he was back with it, probing into the darkness with the yellow beam. There was a small patch of moisture just inside, but then the tunnel climbed upwards and toward the ridge. On hands and knees he entered. It was uncomfortably close for the first 20 feet or so, and then the cavern opened up around him. The men who had built this place, he saw, had taken a natural crevice in the granite rock, sealed it with masses of poured concrete, and then covered it with earth. The main chamber was bigger than the living room of a house, and they had left an opening up near the peak of the vaulted roof where fresh air and a faint filtered light entered. Wooden boxes and crates were stacked everywhere on concrete blocks up off the floor, stenciled with legends like rifle caliber 30 M1, 9mm para, 193 ball, 7.62 by 39 mm, and 5.56 mm. He pushed between them and crawled to the wall, where he found cardboard boxes wrapped with plastic sheeting. They were imprinted with strange names like CCI, Olin, WW748, Bullseye, and RL550B. He did not know what the crates and boxes contained and was afraid to break the seals, but near the center of the room he found a plastic-wrapped carton labeled "Open This First." With his penknife he slit the heavy plastic wrapping. It contained books, he saw with some disappointment, but he studied the titles and found that they were manuals on weapons and how to repair them, how to clean them, how to fire them, and ammunition, how to store it, how to reload it. And there was something unusual, a history of the United States. He lifted it from the carton and crawled back to the open air. Leaning against a stone, he tore open a heavy vinyl bag that enclosed the book and began reading at random. Flipped the pages every few moments. On each page, something new met his eye, contradicting everything he had been taught. Freedom is not won, he learned by proud words and declarations. He remembered a quotation taught at the university. Blood alone moves the wheels of history. An Italian dictator named Mussolini had said that, but now he read of a man named Patrick Henry who said the tree of liberty must be refreshed from time to time with the blood of patriots and tyrants. Mao was required reading at the university too, and now he recalled that this man, called a hero by the state, had once said political power comes from the barrel of a gun. Freedom is never granted, it is won by men who are willing to die, willing to lose everything so that others may have the greatest possession of them all, liberty. Mentally, he began to list those he could trust, men who had been arrested for speaking out, women whose husbands had been arrested and never returned, friends who had been denied certification because of their father's military records. The countryside seethed with anger and frustration. These were people who longed to be free, but who had no means to resist. Until now. Thomas laid the book aside, then worked the stone back into position, carefully placing leaves and moss around the base to hide any evidence that it had been disturbed. He tucked the book under his arm and started for home with the rays of the rising sun warming his back. He imagined his grandfather's touch in the heat, a forgiving touch. A long, hard struggle was coming, he knew with certainty, that defied the explanation that he would not live to see the day America would once again be free. His blood and that of many patriots and tyrants would be spilled, but perhaps America's tree of liberty would live and flourish again. There is a long line stretching through the history of this world, a line of those who valued freedom more than their lives. Thomas Adams now took his place at the end of that column as he determined that he would have liberty or death. He would be in good company. Well, there you have it. A word to the wise and a little bit of future insight for you, a little few suggestions maybe. Take that for what it's worth. I love those stories. It really, really makes you think. So hopefully you all enjoyed it. And we're going to go ahead and call it a night. And we'll be back live tomorrow night at our regular time. Amy will be back next Monday. Hope everybody has a great night. We'll see you tomorrow. Thanks for joining me. You've been listening to The Shooting Bench. Tune in Monday through Thursday from 8 to 9 p.m. Pacific, 11 p.m. to midnight Eastern for the most politically incorrect show on talk radio. Tune in again on Fridays at the same time for 2 hours of classic country music on Liberty Lounge.
Spend some time in San Francisco.
And catch Living Way Out Here with me, Amy Reynolds, Monday, Tuesday, and Thursday at 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, for the only good news out there. Trivia, stories, tips, hints, and fun on Living Way Out Here, right here on the Survival Circle Network.
Lakers.